We're going to talk about the problem of gun violence in the U.S. this hour and what can be done to reduce it. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, January 15th. There is a summit on reducing gun violence going on right now at Johns Hopkins University, and a Wisconsin doctor is among the experts attending and sharing recommendations. We will talk with him for the first part of this segment, followed by a Duke University public affairs professor and author of a book about gun control, who will react to whether any gun law changes could be enacted. The White House is expected to release a plan to reduce gun violence this week. It could come as early as tomorrow. These are recommendations that were gathered by Vice President Joe Biden following the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting a month ago. What do you think needs to happen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our first guest is Dr. Stephen Hargarten, professor and chair of emergency medicine and associate dean of the Medical College of Wisconsin, where he directs the Injury Research Center. He joins us from the Summit on Reducing Gun Violence that is hosted by the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thank you very much for joining us. So why are guns a public health issue?
Well, I think that gun violence is defined as a public health issue, affects families, affects individuals, and affects communities across the United States. And public health approaches that have been used to reduce tobacco-related illness and car crash injuries have been effective in the past to controlling deaths and illness from these types of products. And I think we've got an opportunity to do the same with gun-related violence, gun-related deaths and injuries that affect communities across the United States. And by employing public health tools, we can start to hopefully see a reduction in these deaths and disabling injuries.
What sorts of public health tools?
Well, I think one of the things that you look at is you try to separate out areas that we can potentially make a difference of. Increasing our ability to reduce access of this product to those who are unauthorized, doing a better job of keeping guns out of the hands of individuals who have felonious backgrounds, who have significant mental illness. I think that you also want to strengthen the environment. One of the ways is to look at the background checks that are not fully closed in terms of private sales. Many criminals acknowledge that they get their firearms through private transactions. And by closing that opening gap, if you will, is another approach to, again, reduce access to unauthorized individuals. Finally, we can do a better job of looking at the firearm. It's technology and seeing if there are opportunities to reduce access. And indeed, technologies are emerging and, in fact, present in guns that have electronic safety features that reduce unintentional discharges and, more importantly, link the gun to an authorized user. So you've got multiple strategies similar to the kinds of multiple strategies that we in public health are constantly talking about with car crash safety that really began in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Well, from the perspective,
where all aspects,
Yeah,
look, we're all aspects we're taking care of. So.
Yeah, I wanted to talk because I know we have a limited time with you. You treated victims of the shooting at the Sikh temple here in Wisconsin last year. Did that change the way you thought about gun violence as a public health issue?
Well, actually, Frederick Hospital, as a leading level one trauma center in the region, actually has been the primary receiving hospital for three mass shootings over the past 5 years here in southeastern Wisconsin, starting with the shooting at the Sheridan Hotel back in, I believe it's 2007. So we have actually quite a bit of experience in treating gunshots. Many of us, however, see that our ability to treat is really reaching an extraordinarily effective plateau. But the Sikh shooting was notable in that six victims died at the scene before we could get close to being able to save them. And I think that's a stronger message that really challenges all of us to do better at preventing these kinetic energy outbreaks, as I like to describe them, from occurring, because once the bullet's discharged, there's not that much that we can do as members of the trauma system to save these individuals' lives. They die at the scene oftentimes, and I think that's a really significant element of what we need to do better. We've got to look at reducing these bullets from being discharged from these products.
Yeah, and while all of us hear about the mass shootings, we don't necessarily know your perspective from the emergency medicine field. You see this kind of violence, what, daily? Hourly?
Well, certainly there are violent activities going on in our communities across Wisconsin and across the United States. And many of us are working hard to try to instill better behavioral characteristics among our youth. We certainly don't want to have any family suffer deaths from gun violence, which unfortunately happens in Milwaukee. It happens in Madison less frequently, but it happens across the United States on a all-too-regular basis. And while mass shootings tend to get people's more immediate attention, it's the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month tragedies that we oftentimes forget, where mothers are grieving as much as they have in other tragedies. So it's a really important long-term challenge that we have to reduce gun violence.
What is your hope for the summit on reducing gun violence that you're at right now?
The hope is that the policy recommendations being discussed and will be codified in a book will actually be in the hands of federal congressional leaders. I'm hoping that similar efforts of getting these recommendations in front of state legislators will also be an outcome of this activity, and I certainly wish to disseminate this these findings to our own state legislators and to the governor. I think we can do a lot in Wisconsin as much as federal legislators are contemplating with the Biden's commission's recommendations. I think we all need to do our part on various levels and various sectors of civil society.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Dr. Stephen Hargarten, he is a professor and chair of emergency medicine and associate dean of the Medical College of Wisconsin, where he directs the Injury Research Center. He joined us from a summit on reducing gun violence going on at Johns Hopkins University. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be mostly sunny, some scattered light snow possible this morning. But for the most part, mostly sunny today. Highs will be in the mid to upper 20s. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we will follow up on today's State of the State Address. Governor Walker delivering his State of the State Address tonight at 7 o'clock, which you can hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll have plenty of reaction and analysis for you of the State of the State of Wisconsin tomorrow, all morning long on the Ideas Network. At a news conference yesterday, President Obama addressed the effort to review gun control laws and other policy changes to reduce gun violence in the wake of the Newtown Elementary shooting.
What you can count on is that the things that I've said in the past, the belief that we have to have stronger background checks, that we can do a much better job in terms of keeping these magazine clips with high capacity out of the hands of folks who shouldn't have them, an assault weapons ban that is meaningful, that those are things I continue to believe make sense.
We will discuss the politics of gun control now with Kristen Goss, who is an associate professor at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy and author of Disarmed, The Missing Movement for Gun Control in America. And if you'd like to join in with any questions or thoughts on changing gun laws in Wisconsin and the politics of such, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Professor Goss joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I know we don't have the specifics of Vice President Joe Biden's recommendations that he delivered yesterday to President Obama, but apparently some of these recommendations would require congressional action, but others can be done by executive order. Can you tell us what sorts of things might be able to be done by executive order?
That's right. So the rumor is that Vice President Biden submitted 19 items to the president, and I don't have a pipeline to the White House that's good enough to tell me what those are, but I think some of the things that have been, you know, leaked might include requiring federal agencies. I think there are 60 of them that have data on people who might be prohibited under federal law from owning a firearm, and those agencies have not been very good about submitting those data to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, which is what federally licensed dealers call to see if the person who's trying to buy a gun is legally allowed to have one. So that would be one example. Mm-hmm. Another example that's actually very important to us as scholars would be to find a way through executive order to allow federal agencies like the Centers for Disease Control to start funding firearms and gun violence research again. They had a fairly active program in the early 1990s, and at the behest of the National Rifle Association, that research program was defunded. And that sounds sort of arcane, probably, to normal people, but you know, the role of sort of what of research is very, very important to what kinds of policies we want to enact, especially if we want to be very careful not to, you know, infringe on the Second Amendment rights of gun owners. And I always sort of say, if you want to know how important research is, think where the anti-smoking movement would be without the Surgeon General's report.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of the NRA, it said yesterday it has the votes to prevent something like the assault weapons ban from passing Congress. Okay. Do you have any doubt about that?
You know, at this moment, I don't. You know, I'm one of those people. I've watched, studied gun violence for 20 years, and I've watched, you know, too many of these massacres, you know, sort of follow the same pattern of, you know, a collective gasp of horror, you know, fairly unchanneled outrage going on for a few weeks, maybe a few months, and then, you know, members of Congress just keeping their heads down and waiting for the fury to pass. And I initially thought this may be, you know, this event may follow the same pattern. I'm beginning to actually think that this country just sort of, the Sandy Hook was a tipping point. And I think, you know, maybe if the vote were held right now, I think the NRA probably was right. But I think there's still a lot of mobilizing going on among, you know, pro gun control people who you know, are really ready to sustain the pressure. And a few things are a little different this time from even after Virginia Tech or some of the earlier incidents. You know, I think there's a lot of money right now flowing into the movement, which is something that the movement has needed forever. There are new coalition partners coming in, you know, actors that have, you know, a real capacity to mobilize people but have not been actively involved in the gun debate before. And, you know, this would include some of the progressive organizations that were associated with the Obama campaign and allied organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also, you know, law enforcement, looking to see what law enforcement does is going to be really important. They've always been sort of the critical factor in how a gun vote goes on Capitol Hill. And so I'll be looking to see how they come into the picture.
Yeah, we had also just last week Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who was the victim of a shooting, announced right. She's going to start up a new gun control advocacy group. Is
yeah.
this sort of thing going to make a difference?
Well, hers is more of a PAC, which, you know, I think is a very interesting idea. I mean, to my mind, gun politics, the most important factor really has been intense, dedicated, sustained mobilization of voters and people who will call their congressmen, that kind of thing. I think the NRA's money is secondary to its ability to mobilize. But that said, you know, I think one of the major disadvantages of the gun control movement has been that it doesn't have a lot of money. And so, you know, and the other thing with the Giffords' effort that's interesting is, besides the money that she's probably capable of raising by virtue of her high profile and, you know, her very authoritative voice, obviously, as a victim, is that she really knows Congress. I mean, she knows it from the inside. She would know how to spend that money. You know, I think that's quite important. So,
yeah.
And she's a gun owner. So, you know, what gun owners do in all this is also going to be really interesting. There are, you know, millions of gun owners out there who, you know, do not line up perfectly with the NRA leadership's policy agendas. And, you know, whether they are willing to sort of provide political cover to members of Congress, I think will be actually critical if the gun control movement is going to make any progress here.
Haven't there been some polls? I don't know if it's exclusively of gun owners, but that there is support of, you know, reasonable gun control efforts.
Yeah, that's right. So one of the things that the gun control forces are doing this time around, that to a greater extent than I can recall in the past, is trying to drive a wedge between the NRA leadership, which they see as extreme and out of step with mainstream opinion, and, you know, rank and file gun owners like the people in my family. I've come from the West, who, you know, might be willing to support, you know, modest measures to, you know, tighten or close loopholes, for example. And so one of the efforts in that regard was the Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor Menino's group, Mayors Against Gun Violence, which has emerged as sort of one of the leading forces in the gun control movement. Their organization sponsored some polls over the summer of gun owners and of NRA members, and indeed they found that for certain types of measures like universal background checks, there is majority support among gun owners, and I believe even among NRA members for that. Now, gun owners and NRA members also diverge, so you're going to see, not surprisingly, NRA members are less favorable toward even modest measures than our gun owners. But there are many more gun owners than there are NRA members. So,
let's take a call from Scott in Green Bay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning. I kind of want to preface this with this: I'm a proponent of gun control. I think it's asinine the amount of guns that we have in America. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, you look at the last tragedy. I mean, it was not his gun, and he stole it from somebody who bought it legally. I'm wondering what your guess, after we pass legislation, which we will do, which I hope we do, and after this legislation fails, that it won't stop these kinds of shootings, then what we do? Because I think it's a societal issue. I think United States as a culture is really to blame more than anything else. I mean, the violence that in video games that the kids play, the violence you see on television and in movies, I think that's an integral part of it. And like I said, I'm for gun control. I think there should be background checks on every weapon that's sold.
All right, because we have limited time, Scott, Professor Goss, what about that? He says once we pass some sort of laws and they don't prevent these things, then what?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. One of the things that the gun control movement has always had to deal with is the fact that there are, you know, somewhere between 250 and 300 million guns already in the hands of, you know, the vast majority of them law-abiding gun owners, and there's zero chance that any of those are going to be, you know, quote-unquote confiscated, despite what the NRA says. So we've got a lot of guns out there, and so, you know, as the cart, you know, there's the horse already out of the barn. You know, I think that there are some measures that have been shown to work, and a lot of them actually deal with sort of policing and enforcement in the way that the NRA favors. The danger, I think, and I wrote a piece about this a few years ago, the danger about making gun policy based on individual events is that you can always sort of say, well, you know, X, Y, or Z law wouldn't have prevented this particular event from happening. You know, but that what's important to remember is, as horrifying as these massacres are, you know, most gun violence in this country doesn't happen in mass rampage shootings. Most of it happens, you know, in sort of everyday, quote-unquote, violence. And a lot of the gun control measures that are sort of on the agenda right now, one would hope would, you know, be able to sort of make a dent in that. So things like universal background checks, that's sort of emerging as the most likely policy that, you know, will gain sort of the most traction in Congress. You know, ramping up the record keeping that and the transfer of records to go into the system so that we can actually, you know, weed out more people who, you know, aren't allowed to own a gun. And, you know, the other issue with gun control is, and this is just unfortunate for all concerned, is, you know, these measures are going to take time to show any effects. And we're not a society that has a lot of patience. So I think your caller's right. I mean, there's no question we could pass, you know, the strictest gun laws in the world and we'd still have another tragedy.
Yeah.
And everyone would say, oh, it didn't work.
We have just a minute to go. I'm sorry, so short on time. But you expect that we're going to see some changes in gun policies very soon.
I am not a soothsayer. I'm a political scientist, and I have no idea what this Congress is going to do. I mean, the numbers, particularly in the House, don't look great for, you know, changes in the gun laws. But, you know, it's really going to depend, I think, sort of what the president said. It's really going to depend on how mobilized, you know, everyday Americans get around this issue and how sustained and intense that mobilization is.
Yeah, and even if Congress, though, doesn't pass some things, some executive orders are likely to be signed.
Well, and New York passed a huge gun law last night as I was going to bed, so don't forget about the state.
That's right. Well, we'll talk again, I hope. Thanks very much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
Kristen Goss is associate professor at Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy, author of Disarmed. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing this program. Thanks to Amanda Magnus and Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.